Sleep Tech Show.
Good evening. Welcome to the Linux Link Tech Show. We're just about ready to get started. Excited to get started on this snowy Wednesday evening in January. But first, we're going to play our promo as people get situated, logged into the chat. Alan has to go take a dump, so we're going to play the promo. We'll be right back in a half an hour.
You're scaring people away.
Hi, folks. This is Link from the Linux Link Tech Show. Have you ever thought to yourself, I have a question for these guys? Or, I wonder if they would review my product? Or, why don't they talk about this? Or maybe, I sure would like to support these fellas somehow. Or just, how do I get in touch with them? Well, the easy answer is to email us at techshow@thelinuxlink.net. You can let us know any questions, suggestions, or information you might have, and perhaps even get mentioned on the show. Email us at techshow@thelinuxlink.net. And let us know how we're doing and whether or not you enjoy the show. And also, catch us on IRC every Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern by pointing your favorite IRC client to our server, thelinuxlink.net, and joining Channel Pound Tech Show. Hope to see you there.
Hey, hey, Dan cutting in here. Do you have any questions, comments, complaints? Don't like what Alan said last time? Feel free to email us at techshow@thelinuxlink.net. Do you live in or around Bethlehem, Pennsylvania? Plan on being in the area some Wednesday night? If so, and you would like to join us in the studio, we would love to have you. Again, email us at techshow@thelinuxlink.net. Linux is a community project. Being a community project, it tends to foster regular gatherings of Linux enthusiasts who collectively call themselves Linux users groups. Chances are, there is a Linux users group in your area. We here at the Tech Show belong to the Lehigh Valley Linux Users Group. So if you hail from the area, come join us. Membership is free and fraught with fun. If you're new to Linux, then consider checking out our sister organization, the Linux Special Interest Group, run by LVLUG member Jeff Sartler. The Linux SIG caters to newbies and runs hands-on labs. If you are south of us, be sure to look up the Bucks County Linux Users Group or the Philadelphia Linux Users Group. Those to the east, there is the New Jersey Linux Users Group. More information can be found at thelinuxlink.net, which strives to be the unofficial portal to Linux and Linux happenings in the Lehigh Valley. If you find yourself in one of those rare locations that is not conveniently near any Linux Users Group, get your name and desires out there on the web. Contact the closest lugs, and chances are you will find neighbors who are looking to get together. All you need is a few enthusiastic people and a place to meet, be it a living room, basement, library, or local pub. You will meet new people, learn some stuff, and have boatloads of fun. So remember, support your local users groups. Finally, we here at the Linux Link Tech Show thank you for listening, and hope you enjoy this episode as much as we enjoyed putting it together. Actually, that went a lot faster than I expected. We're back. My name is Dan.
My name here. Is Link.
I didn't introduce you yet.
Well,
you wait your turn. You wait your turn.
I don't want to wait my turn.
I'm here with my glass of Diet Cherry Coke. Finally found a place to have it in the valley. And I'll introduce my co-host tonight, Mr. Alan Metzler.
Hello. Hello, all.
And now your turn, Link.
No, well, Link who?
Fezzenden.
Who? Nobody.
Fezzenden.
No, no, no. You're crazy.
Got a jam-packed show tonight.
Too loud. Your mic's too close.
I'm still too loud. I can't hear myself.
Speaking of mics too close to everybody's faces, those of you who are on IRC right now, please let me know if you cannot hear me or if I'm too loud or too close to the microphone. I'm testing on a new microphone tonight. Thank you. We now return you to your regularly scheduled wash coat.
Thank you.
Dan's a little off tonight.
Now, I'm trying to listen. I could barely hear myself through this.
No, you're coming through all right, at least as far as I can hear.
As far as I'm
listening
hear,
to the stream. So.
Because I could barely hear myself.
She's really confusing when I'm
now,
like...
I can hear Link really well, but I can't hear myself that well. It sounds like I'm somewhere else. I don't know. We got that nice little delay, so the feedback coming in on the IRC chat line is hard to judge.
Now, well, we have like five delays.
Oh,
we
my
have,
God.
We
You're
have,
like blasting
now I'm
me
blasting
out of the
you.
Seat over here.
We have like five delays. We have the delay to the delay into the server. We have the delay through the audio equipment. We've got the delay through the delay that we have through IRC and the people there.
Well,
delay through IceCast.
Now they can all hear Link better. Now
I'm really loud on. You got to turn the monitoring down on my.
Wait a minute, Link. I mean, Alan, did you just bump the cord or something? Because now I can hear.
You may be pulling it out of the jack.
Why?
Wow.
Well, now I'm dead again.
What?
Now I can barely hear myself again.
Turn it the other way. Turn it right in the middle there. There you go.
Now. No. No. Is that it? Oh. Yeah. Ooh,
you know what we need? We need,
now, you know what?
We need
it
like
must
a
be.
Dedicated audio file geek.
I apologize, people, for coming in way too loud.
Yeah, to come in
Dan's
here and run
Dan's headphones
audio
are, like, stretched across the computer, across the monitor, and across the table. So he's pretty much at the end of his rope there.
And then he chews on it on top of it. Oh, see, there, I just died again. So I'm just going to take it that it's just this headphone cable.
It's just your cable.
Okay.
All right. Hopefully I'm doing better now. Does it sound all right, Alan?
Yeah.
Okay. Now we're ready to go.
Something like
that's
that.
All our equipment before.
Right.
Before
right before we broadcast, like 3 seconds maybe.
Yeah, we got the 5 minute promo and then the 10 minutes of testing, and now we can start the show. Excellent. Yes, January. It's snowing over here.
It is. It's snowing pretty good right now, and it's supposed to get really, really cold too.
Really. Is that going to be any different from the past week and a half?
No. Yeah, really different. Because by Friday, it's supposed to be something like 30 or 40 below zero with the wind chill.
Excellent.
And this is in, this is Pennsylvania, not Antarctica. Speaking of that, where the hell is this global warming crap I keep hearing about? You know?
Well, technically, oh my
40
God,
below
now
zero.
I'm blasting myself out, Alan.
40 below zero, where the hell is this global warming? Is it like, you know... Maybe just polar warming or something like
that?
Well,
no, that affects the entire ecosystem.
I was under the impression that global warming did, too, but it sure isn't getting very warm.
Well,
here.
It makes...
I don't
summer,
recall it being...
It makes hotter hot and colder cold.
Yeah, that's what it is. That's why they call it warming, yeah.
But that's the
like
way it McDonald's
is. Like a McDonald's hamburger. The cold side's cold and the hot side's hot.
Remember when they made the McDLT that first came out?
I do. In fact, I was working for McDonald's at the time.
Huge styrofoam packaging that had everybody in an uproar at the amount of waste that it produced.
The package, right.
It was like two of the regular Big Mac cartons.
They didn't have like a sort of like a container almost next to
it. Oh, yeah.
It was
a huge package.
Oh, man.
People would complain about that, but yet everybody liked to have their lettuce cold for some reason. I can't figure that out.
That's the way it is. And then they switched to the paper. Remember the paper? They're still using the paper, right?
Right.
But they had the cardboard.
The thing that used to kill me, like I said, this came out when I was actually working at McDonald's a long time ago. And the thing that used to kill me is they had this big package, and their theme of this thing was to keep the hot side hot and the cold side cold. But when you put everything into this gigantic carton, you would put it in the warming bin.
And warm up food.
You know? So, like, everything was getting warmed up equally. It was just kind of stupid.
Were you working there when they switched over and they used to put the Big Mac in that cardboard sleeve and then wrap it up?
Yep.
Did they build the whole Big Mac in that cardboard sleeve?
Yeah.
Did they build the Big Mac out of cardboard then?
It tastes
sometimes
like it.
Sometimes you wonder. Well, no, I actually worked for McDonald's way back when they used to actually cook their food, and that's one of my major disappointments with the place now is that they don't cook anything. You go in there and it's like it's a Burger King assembly line. Everything's microwaved. They pull a little meat out and they microwave it up inside the sandwich and send it out to you. And I mean, I was actually there. I won awards for actually working the grill.
Well, next time we have a cookout, we have a
silver spatula award, man, for being the fastest grill cook in upstate New York.
So you could slap your meat around the grill really fast.
You bet, man.
No, wait a minute. You were dissing on
me. I have a question here, though. The fastest. Isn't it, like, timed anyways?
Yeah.
It is, but it's still a matter of, like, you know, you still have efficiency and stuff like that.
Oh, okay.
And you have a lot more, like, the meat itself cooking and flipping is timed.
Yeah.
But you still, you know, if you have 30 or 40 pieces of hamburger on the grill and the timer goes off, you've got to be able to get them things off of there pretty quick, you know what I mean? Because they, you know, the grill doesn't shut off, it just keeps cooking.
Now, I worked at Burger King, and in defense of Burger King, they didn't microwave their food over there.
No, but they microwaved it a lot sooner. They went to microwaves a lot sooner than McDonald's did. McDonald's went to clamshell about the time Burger King did.
Well, how long
Burger
ago are you
King
talking?
Went to microwaves.
Because I worked at Burger King in 93.
This was maybe 12, 13 years ago.
So that's before 93. Yeah. Now, where I worked, we had the broiler. And you'd stick the beef in the broiler to go through. Now, you keep sticking the meat back through, and about five or six times, you get a little piece that looks like a charred nugget. And then you take it home and you feed it. You feed it to one of your roommates.
I used to do that when I was in college. I worked at a McDonald's in college, too, and I used to bring home, at the end of the shift, you could bring home, like, the wasted food and stuff, and I would bring home these giant bags of, 30-hour-old chicken nuggets. You could literally bounce them off of the walls and stuff. It was great.
Yeah, about nuggets. A half an hour before close, like 50 burgers start going through the broiler. You know you're going to have an excess to take home.
No, it was that or like go home and eat like mayonnaise toast or something like that. You know, good old college food.
What was amazing, though, for some reason, that stuff sat in the bottom of the fridge for a long time and it never spoiled.
Right.
It might have
designed not to.
It might have shrank a little bit, but
it was still all right.
It never spoiled.
And 30-hour-old chicken nuggets with really crappy beer.
With the really chicken.
That's the breakfast of champions. But anyway, do we actually have like some tech stuff to talk about tonight?
Yeah, we do.
All right. What was that?
Oh, you know what? One more thing about that. Now, we used to sit in the back at Burger King, and, you grab the chicken tenders and wrap them in a piece of cheese and fill them up with condiments and eat them back there behind the line. Now, I did a stint at King's IGA in Coopersburg making donuts. Making the donuts.
Back behind the line playing with his chicken wrapped in cheese. Yeah, okay.
And I had a...
the show is going.
I had a friend that worked in a produce department at the time. So I used to get off of work like 7 o'clock in the morning because I'd go in at 1, 2 o'clock. And I had there was like a tray of donut rejects. Like, if you filled something up too much and you broke it or the donut broke. Like, I used to take a Boston cream and just keep filling and filling it until it became a reject so I'd have something at the end of the shift. But my friend came over. He came over and visit me. And he's like,
he brought
you
the
know,
whippets.
What?
He was in produce.
Yeah, he was in produce. So he'd come over and he'd be standing there talking to me. He'd be eating the reject donuts. And then the one day the president of the region came by, passed by. He's like, hey, what's up? My friends are eating donuts. Saying hi to them. That day he got his ass in trouble for stealing from the company because he ate a reject piece of donut.
That's just like, mean, man.
What the heck?
You set him up, dude.
Not intentionally. But that was some, that was a fun job. Oh. So we're going to get started now with some
Dan
tech
gives
stuff.
Absolute new meaning to the time to make the donuts commercial.
That was, I made those donuts, man. And the donut holes. You got that machine that you crank the donut holes out of. Then you got to quickly spread them apart before they stick together. And flip them over with the little chopsticks. And then burn your fingers. All right.
Next week we'll be telling you how to do this under Linux.
Yeah.
Right.
How to make donut holes with Linux. We are going to kick off talking. I guess I'll start with some of my topics, Link, because why not? After the show last week.
You know, this is the Dan Show. Go right ahead, man.
After the show last week, yeah, got work on the mind. I went back into work, and I didn't mean to spend so much time there, but I came home at 6:30 the next morning and still had to go remote access to configure the rest of it.
For you,
yeah,
right?
You know it. But I got this really great product called Virtual Office running on Novell. It's nice. It's a portal services that gives our users access to not only their email, but remote file access. So all the server shares that they have, they can access remotely through a web browser. They have capability of creating virtual teams, which allows them to share files, coordinate with a shared calendar, and do online live chat, Java-based virtual client, and searching our eDirectory for information. So it's a sweet little package, which Novell calls their portal services. It's a lower-end version. And you can see how Novell is migrating towards a non-operating system-specific style of management. Their new iManager services have you do basically everything you could do in NWAdmin, and in Council One, about 90% of that stuff you can now do through web management, which is really great. And I've been really, really cool, and I was so psyched about this product. And I use a OS X Panther work or laptop for most of my work, and occasionally I'll jump into the Citrix if I need to do something through Windows. So I spent most of my time using Mozilla and managing the system with Mozilla, and I thought this was the greatest thing since sliced bread. Getting into Virtual Office with Mozilla, I come home, use Firebird, works perfect. Then I made comments to my coworkers about how great this thing works, so somebody wanted to drop in, and of course everybody else is using Windows XP over there. Yeah, ooh. So they bring up XP, Internet Explorer, and first thing we notice is Virtual Office doesn't have a logout button in Internet Explorer, just like it does in Mozilla. So I thought this was rather odd, because you close down Internet Explorer, you fire it back up again, get you right into Virtual Office of the last person who logged in. So it's like, okay. I delete all the files, delete all the cookies, delete all the cache, close it, you know, fire it back up, it lets you back in. So then I'm like, huh. I reboot the machine, fire it up, it lets you right back in. I'm like, what the heck? There's no logout button. Now you look at Mozilla or Netscape browser, there's a logout button up there, but for some reason, it's nowhere in Internet Explorer. I put on Mozilla on the Windows XP machine. There's the logout button. So it's Internet Explorer specific. No logout button. So I created a logout button, since I have not received any information back from the Novell forums about how to do this, because I can't find the templates that they're using to create this. What's interesting is the Mozilla browsers are using CSS and a form. to generate the layout. Internet Explorer is using tables. Okay? Go figure. Well, I started doing mini sessions on Virtual Office for the rest of to teach our teachers and staff how to actually use the software. And we went over, and I was so excited to get this thing going because it runs perfectly. I know it runs in Internet Explorer. I had to put together a CD that has Mozilla, Firebird, Camino, Thunderbird, Netscape, Opera, OpenOffice, and the GIMP on there, and Java runtime environment for people, because I was going to basically say, hey, there's no logout. I recommend using this. But then I found a logout, but I figured, hey, I'll just give them the disk anyhow. It has all this cool software for both Windows and OS X systems. And I went to do the first mini session in the elementary school. Now, the elementary schools are all Windows 98 workstations right now. They sat down, and I figured, hey, I'll have them log in. Could not log into it at all in Windows 98 with Internet Explorer. But you know what? You put Firebird down on there, simple, unzip it, click on the executable, and in 3 minutes you're into the Virtual Office without a problem. And a logout button.
Logout
button. Yeah, so it's interesting that it's a neat product. It runs really well. It has all this functionality, but it doesn't work well in Internet Explorer. So on the website...
That just, man, that makes me feel terrible.
Yeah, I know. So on the web page, when you click on the access for staff access for the remote access stuff, I have the choice where they can go in their basic email, which they could before, or Virtual Office. And right under the blurb of Virtual Office, I have a recommended browser. They say Mozilla and Netscape. And I give a reason why. I have a little link they can go to read why these browsers are recommended and what are the downfalls of Internet Explorer. And I've provided everybody, you know, that I've done mini sessions with that disk of free software. Everybody's excited. I mean, what's interesting is I briefly mentioned OpenOffice, saying that if you don't have a word processor at home and you need to do something, just use OpenOffice. It's great. And it's like, wow, a free office suite that does all this.
Yeah.
You know, I say give it a try. If you like it, copy the disk, hand it out to all your friends.
Did you put that on the disk as well?
What's that?
Did you put that on the disk?
What, OpenOffice?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's on the disk. Come on, I wouldn't hand out a disk without OpenOffice on it.
OpenOffice, Firebird.
Thunderbird. Or email
regular
client.
Mozilla.
Mozilla's on there, full version Mozilla. I did put Netscape and Opera on there. And Camino for OS X users. And GIMP for Windows users. I did include OpenOffice for OS X, but they have to install the X server through Apple. Now, you either have to download it if you're using Jaguar, or if you have Panther, it already comes with it, and you just need to make sure you install it.
Or you can just install Yellow Dog.
Yeah, you
In
could.
In which case, you don't have to have extra software to make your Mac run faster and be Linux compatible. It can do that natively just by running Linux by itself.
Oh, and I could have just foregone with all the disks and handed out Nopix, right?
Yeah.
And there would be no problem.
There you go.
Now, there was a question on the web, on the chat line. Isn't Novell Virtual Office expensive? Comparatively speaking, for the operating system and the licenses, it's probably on par with... Well, it's cheaper than Windows licensing, but it's not free as in Linux free. You know, that there you do have a licensing cost.
Right.
So, yes, it does cost a little bit of money. But being a Novell shop and not seeing that we're going to convert over to Linux in the near future, unfortunately.
But Novell is cool because Novell is working on...
Yeah, Novell is moving towards building
their
system
platform to Linux,
on
right?
Linux, yes.
Now, they're
going
to become just multi-platform, or are they trying to move their platform to Linux?
From what my understanding is, they will be moving to Linux, but they will offer both the DOS and Linux, and I would suspect that eventually the DOS version is going to be phased out. In fact, I think they're trying to phase the DOS out completely and be platform agnostic, but
fight.
Because I tell you, something underneath.
Novell definitely gets my vote because they've done a lot of Linux support in the recent past months for people who are having problems with SCO and their anti SCO tactics about who actually owns codes for or the rights for a Unix code and all that kind of thing. So, and they've been making a lot of inroads towards Linux, and they're investing a lot of their company resources into it, and I really think that's pretty cool. Along with IBM, who's been doing that too. But what I wanted to interject something really quick here that I wanted to talk about, but it goes really well with what you just mentioned, and that's Mozilla Firebird.
Excellent.
Firebird.
It is awesome, people. If you have not tried this browser yet, this is a must-try browser.
Are you running it right now on the laptop?
I am right now.
And that's what I'm running? What are you running over there, Alan?
Same thing.
Firebird?
In fact, I'm running two instances of it on my laptop. The coolest thing about this is when you first mentioned it to me, like, what was it, towards the end of last year, and I downloaded the copy, and I updated it, I think, once after that. The last one that I have was like 0.061 or something like that. And just a few days ago, I went out and grabbed the newest version, which is 0.7.
Yep.
And it is easily twice as fast as 0.61, which I thought was like four times faster than Netscape, probably two or three times faster than Mozilla proper. And it's just fantastic. And now, it does lack a little bit of support for some things in it. Like, I don't think it has forward through of Telnet or FTP and stuff like that. It's just a browser. But it's really fast. And for all practical purposes, man, it does what you need it to do. You know? No sense in starting up some big, huge, memory-sucking browser just to go view a couple web pages. This thing works really great.
Yeah, I like Firebird. I think it's pretty slim, smooth running, quick, themable, skinnable. Pretty configurable, too. And it has the pop-up blocking.
That's the best part of it right there.
Yeah, it enabled the... I love tab browsing. I'm also hooked a little bit on the Mozilla Optimas with the mouse gestures. I like that, going back and forth. I've been using Firebird for a long time now, for about almost 6 months. I've been strictly with Firebird. I had gone from
I was originally using Galleon for a while.
Yeah, me too.
Which is really nice. The problem is when I installed it up on, when I got Slackware, the Slackware version of it, I could not get it to recognize my MP3 files. It always wanted to download every one of them. If you clicked on one of them, like because I run that server, it downloads playlists. And it always wants to save the playlist, and it was driving me up the wall. I couldn't get it to change. I couldn't even find, the settings for it. Whereas on the older versions, it was right there under the preferences. On it, this newer version didn't have it at all. I guess it just assumes it, or it's somewhere where I have no clue where it is. I went over to Firebird. Everything was right there. Set it up. It was good to go.
It is excellent. It's speedy.
Yes.
That's the I loved Galleon on GNOME 1.4, but when it moved to Galleon 2, it was significantly slower than Galleon 1 and loading. And Mozilla Firebird has just been, I fire that thing up, and it's in a couple seconds, it's flying on my screen, and I'm browsing.
Yeah.
And anything that I've ever looked at in Mozilla has run just as well on Firebird. It does the Flash. All my plugins work really well, and I don't have the overhead that Mozilla has.
The only thing I did was when I installed the Flash plugin for it, I don't have any sound on that. Now, I don't know if I screwed up when I installed it. I haven't gone back and looked at it because I really don't go to that many pages that have Flash or Shockwave or anything like that on there. So I have to look back into that. So I know that's the only thing it plays the animation, but it just doesn't have sound.
Yeah, I've noticed that too. Some sites do have sound and some don't, and it's really odd. And I'm wondering if that has to do with ALSA, and it's something I've been meaning to look into.
Oh, maybe that's it. Yeah, I never thought about that because I hadn't tried it before I got everything set up here. So that may be it.
Because my daughter uses the busted laptop, busted up laptop over here, the Mexican jalopy.
You have to buy you some more duct tape for it.
And she has made a comment that some of the sites that she goes to, like Barbie.com and Polly Pocket and everything, they're supposed to have sound, but you don't hear
Home
the sound. So, I mean, at least I
don't know. It's been a day or two since I've been to Polly Pocket's website, actually. So.
Well, not that Polly Pocket.
Yeah, the only one I ever go to is like Homestar Runner, but that's besides. That's the only real Flash or Shockwave or whatever you want to call it, the site that I really go to.
Which site?
HomestarRunner.com.
I should probably check those sites out, though, because I don't run OSS on this laptop. I run... Well, I don't run ALSA on this laptop. I run OSS. So.
That's just an hilarious... I always thought that was an hilarious site. When I was going to my AutoCAD class, my teacher turned me on to that one. He used to play it during breaks. It's hilarious.
Homestar Runner. Well, you know, I'll check it out. And if anybody out there on the list, not the list, the chat server, has any information on flash and sound cards and Linux, then, of course, Mellophone is saying that if you have a card that doesn't have multiple channel support, it doesn't always play. And that could very well be what the situation is.
Could be, yep.
And speaking of flash, somebody wrote a flash editor for Linux.
Really?
I can't remember exactly what the name of it is, and I downloaded it.
It's
now,
like a full featured kind of.
Yeah, it's pretty good compared to the Flash.
You do animations with it now?
Yeah, it almost looks exactly like the Flash that you get from Macromedia.
Neat.
And I'm going to look that up right now. I'll tell you the name of that in just a second. It was really cool. It won some awards. It was going for a project, one of those open source funded projects. I'll find it in a minute. Link, you can continue talking while I do this search in here.
Sure. All right. It's not fair if I do all the talking. Alan, do you have anything that you would like to talk about?
We just glossed over. Hey, anybody have any news?
Well,
Shut up, Alan. I found it.
He saved you.
Alan,
yeah,
there we go.
You see the beads of sweat fall off of Alan's face, man. He's like...
Yeah. It's the Flash for Linux.sourceforge.net. And the guy started it in July of 2003 due to IBM's competition between universities. Building a GUI WYSIWYG type of application.
Flash for Linux.
Flash for Linux. Sourceforge.net.
And you didn't put that on the IRC because why? Flash.
I didn't put it on the IRC.
Yeah.
Oh, because I'm looking at it right here. I'm not paying attention to the IRC right now. And there's some screenshots here. I have it running on my system over there. It's really nice. But check it out. You can develop some Flash, and now with OpenOffice has export to the Flash format
without
animation.
Which works good unless you want animate or something like that.
I mean, it gives some kudos for Flash, at least something with Flash. I hope that they work on updating their client for Linux. And you know what else I'd like to see? If you go to the game sites with Flash, they have some other Shockwave game stuff and everything. I'd like to see the rest of those plugins ported over to Linux.
That would be cool. Alan?
All right, I'll start again.
Yeah.
Right,
it's your turn, Alan.
Just a little news.
Oh, wait, Alan, shut up. We got to take our break.
No, say it again.
No, go ahead, Alan. We'll take a break after.
No, I was just digging around before we started to make it look like I had something for this evening because I really didn't prepare at all, once again. I Googled some stuff, and SCO is now going after the international users for their licensing now.
Yes.
on it, which I just saw that, which I thought was, with the exception of Germany, which was the quote here, there's a court order that prohibits SCO from even talking about its license in Germany.
Right, and that was done like last year sometime, early last year.
I hadn't realized that because I haven't been paying a lot of attention. I mean, I read the SCO stuff on Slashdot, and you know, overall I read it, but I don't really go into it too much. But I thought that was interesting. And another one I picked up was also off of the Google News site, which is really a great site. It was a thing called Migrations from Windows to Linux Saves Thousands. And it's a story of this guy who took his company from Windows servers to mostly Linux servers at this point. His original proposal for upgrading his Windows servers was $175,000 for three servers. He ended up getting it down to, if I read it correctly here, $13,000 for seven Linux servers.
Cool.
There's just a lot more in the article there, and if you do a Google search, you can find it. But I just thought that was really interesting, the price difference. Because being a user, I'm not familiar with Windows pricing, and outside of being screwed over for it when I have to buy the laptop and things like that. But as far as servers go, I don't have any need for them. Well, I don't have any work with those, so I don't know. Those are taken over by other people, so I don't know what the licensings are. So I just thought that was a shocking price.
Cool. All right, and I'm guessing that at this point in time, it's time for our short intermission. And so that's what we're going to do. We're going to put a song out there for you guys to listen to tonight, which is entitled Code is Speech. And this is by a group called the UKUSA. And, of course, like most of the other music that we play on the Linux Link Tech Show, you can find this at the openmusicregistry.org. And we will catch right back up with you in approximately 3 minutes and 16 seconds. See you then.
Cross your fingers, hope it doesn't crash.
That's right, hope it doesn't crash.
Thank you. And we're back. That was Code okay. is
well,
Speech.
Something didn't go right then.
Hope you enjoyed it as much as we did, as it just went flying by.
Zoom!
Zip, zip, zoo. Alan, were you finished?
Yes, I was finished. Thank you.
Finished and reading you all your content off of NewsForge?
Well, no, I was off for like 20, 30 seconds, so you
well,
must
I'll,
have
I'll pop back in while, you know, while we're talking still.
I see.
Excellent. Excellent.
Well, that means I get to talk now, right?
Yeah, you could talk a little bit there.
I talk a little bit. All right. News that I thought was cool. First things first, I just saw today, and in fact, I just caught it before I came over here for the show today, that NetBSD is going to, is having a competition for a new logo. And, for those of you who are not familiar with NetBSD, you really should be. It's pretty cool. And I just found it really interesting that they're gonna try and go for a new logo. They want something, you know, that's perhaps a little bit more professional, something a little bit more reproducible. And you can find news about this and the story at daily.damonnews.org. And check it out. There's some interesting stuff. It's pretty cool for NetBSD users that they're trying to redesign things a little bit and generate some more interest. And it was just a neat story. Something I really didn't expect. You know, they're getting rid of the Daemon. And for those of you,
I was going to say, I'm looking at the NetBSD cover here. What's wrong with the one that they have?
Well, that's the cover that you're looking at is Wasabi's cover.
Oh, okay.
The NetBSD Daemon is a little bit different. It's like the bunch of the Daemons are standing on a pile of computers hoisting a NetBSD flag kind of thing. But they're getting rid of
that's cool.
From what I understand, they're going to get rid of the Daemon altogether, and they want something a little bit more less offensive, I guess, or something like that. I want to change the mascot or just go with a text-based kind of a thing, or you know, they give examples like Seuss's logo and Red Hat logo and stuff like that. But it's just really interesting. And what's going to be cool, especially if you really like BSD like I do, what's going to be cool is to see the submissions, and that's kind of what I'm excited about. A lot of user-generated art and things like that that are going to come in for the submission process for the new logo. And this is all supposed to happen before, I think, February 26th or some such thing. So it's
so you have about a month to get your art pads out.
And like I said, they just announced it today, and I'm sure that there'll be submissions by tomorrow. So I'm really anxious just to see what kind of nifty artwork they have going on. And it just sounds like a lot of fun to me, you know? Other than that, what other news was I thinking of? For those of you in this area who might be a little farther out towards the east, evidently, and you're interested in BSD, New York City, they have just started a New York City BSD user group. It's just being launched. And I'm sure if you Google on and grab the address or the you can grab the URL for the information on that, or again you can go over to daemonnews.org and read all about it per se. Might be interesting. I know we've had a lot of talk recently about coming up with different little side groups based around like the Perl group and
video editing.
A little video editing group kind of thing going on. It might be interesting to get a BSD users type
building
of group.
Firewall for complete newbies.
Yeah, right. It might be interesting to get a little BSD group together for people who are interested in that. The local people, you know, people that are involved in the lug and whatnot. If there's any interest, you know, and you're listening to the show, by all means, let me know and we'll see what we can do, because I use BSD quite a bit myself and happen to really like it. Okay, and now that I've just...
Our resident BSD guru.
Yeah, well, no, it depends on which BSD you're talking about. My particular favorite is NetBSD. However, we do have some people who are in our lug who really, really dig FreeBSD. And, you know, that's cool, too. Just as long as it's not OpenBSD, I can deal with it. Sorry, Theo Durrett. No. Other than that, what did I want to talk about? I wanted to talk about some projects that I have going on that I think are really cool, and I would love to have input from anybody who actually has anything that they would want to contribute about. Some of the things I really would like to play with are home automation. Now, and to that end, what I've done through Linux, I mean, this sounds really stupid, but it was fun for a 15-minute project. What I did was I have a computer in my bedroom. Of course, it, you know, comes with a complimentary sound card and a little bit. So I wrote a little script in Linux to, at 7:30 in the morning when I need to get up, it goes out and it starts playing some classical music for me. You know, it turns the volume down real low first, plays a little classical music, and then every 10 seconds or so, it increments the volume up until it gets to about, say, 70% volume, and then finishes the song out, and it tells me it collected the weather report. Well, I have Flight installed in this thing. For those of you who don't know, that's Festival Light, which you can Google up and find on the net. It's a smaller version of Festival that only comes with one voice, and it's not like the greatest voice in the world, but it's really understandable, and it's much, much easier to get installed and working.
Yeah, Festival's a treat.
Yeah, the Festival's really tough. But it's much easier to get working, so I use Festival Light, and this thing will talk to me, you know. It tells me that it's time to get up, and it tells me it collected the weather report. Then I have a little script that goes out to the NOAA website.
All hey, right. Home Star Runner works for you.
And I know why it does.
What, who, where?
But I ain't going to tell you now. I'll wait till Link's done talking. I apologize.
It goes out to the NOAA website, and it grabs my local weather forecast.
Sorry.
Dan's having all kinds of fun. And it just reads the weather forecast off to me while I'm getting up in the morning, and then it shells out again, and it plays some more music for me, and then, you know, eventually shuts off. And that's my stupid little, you know, alarm clock script. The other thing I'm doing is... I have a friend of mine, Mark, that's in the lug, and I think it was the January issue of the Linux Journal came with this sort of a schematic and some plans for building a serial-controlled outlet, or it's serial-controlling a device through Linux is what it amounted to, and it showed you how to get up some relays and stuff, and Mark has built such a contraption. I haven't got a hold of it yet. It will tomorrow, or no, Friday. But basically, it's an outlet that you can plug in, you know, it has a plug-in, you plug it in your serial port, and you can control it through some software, turn it on, turn it off, and that's going to be a whole lot of fun to play with. I'm not entirely sure what I'm going to turn on and off of this thing yet.
That was my question for you. What are you going to turn on and off?
I don't know, maybe lights or play with something, or I must set up a web page where people can turn on and off a light and look at it through a... You know, look at it through a picture or something like that, through a webcam.
Come Christmas time, you can turn on your Christmas,
yeah,
on off your Christmas lights on the web.
There's all kinds of really fun possibilities with that. Ideally, what I think I would like to do with it at some point in time is hook it up to an electronic door jam,
mm-hmm,
kind of thing, and interface it somewhere where I can control, you know, getting the door open and closed,
okay,
via my Linux box. And that would be a lot of fun, too. I'll have to play with it a little bit and see what I can do with it. But I can't wait to play with it. It's going to be a lot of fun.
I did the light thing through X10. I went the easy way out.
A lot of people do that through X10. You got to use the Firecracker software or something like that?
Yeah. They sold...
Bottle Rocket.
Back. Yeah, well, Bottle Rocket was one of them. But I forget, there was a little dongle that came off the back of your serial port there. I think it was free for shipping and handling on it. And I used that for a while. I use it, X10 in the house, just because I'm lazy to get up and turn on and off the lights, basically. No, I originally bought it because the TV I had gotten hit by lightning so many times. It still worked, but the on and off switch pretty much was dead on it. So there was no way of turning the TV off. And when you did get it off, it would come on in the middle of the night, but like only like half of it. It would be like the tube would come on, but the tuner wouldn't, so you'd just get static. And the X10 was the easiest way of turning the TV off for good in the middle of the night. And then I kept buying some stuff on it. But unfortunately, living in an apartment, I only have, you know, 6 lights in the whole apartment that I can use an X10 on, because everything else is hardwired, and you know, I'm not going to be the one that burns down the apartment building by accident, stuffing an X10 box in there. So unfortunately, I don't use it as much as I'd like to.
Yeah, I liked it. I would like to play with that myself.
I do love your alarm clock thing there.
Yeah, well, it's cool. That's a lot of fun, you know. It was just something stupid, and
you
gave
me
something
to
do for 10
minutes.
It was fun. But what I'm going to do eventually is I have all of these stupid little scripts that I wrote, and another one of my projects, like I have this giant project list of things that I want to do, but another one of my little projects is that one of these days, so everybody check my webpage once in a while, one of these days I'm going to put a repository of all these stupid scripts on this webpage so that you people can have access to them, or whoever can have access to them. And I have a large collection of them now. The problem is that, you know, these are things that I hack together in 15 minutes when I'm really bored, and I haven't commented them and stuff like that. So I'm kind of, as I have a few minutes here and there, I'm going through and reading through things and commenting them a little bit so they make a little bit of sense and stuff like that. And, I mean, I think a lot of them are really, really stupid. However, for people who are just starting, you know, doing some scripting in Linux and stuff like that, they might, you know, that might be just what they're looking for. It might be something that to
help
them
explain.
I would love to see your scripts.
The monitor script that you I don't really have much use for it. I only have one machine, and pretty much if it's on, I know something's working on it.
I think Alan's saying your script sucks.
Yeah, there's
it's actually very good to read through and try, because I don't know much about bash scripting, because again, even at work I'm a user and I don't really have to do too much of that. So it's interesting to read how it's done.
It's some good stuff. And yeah, for those of you who don't know, the script he's talking about is a script that I wrote to do some network monitoring, and it monitors all sorts of services and things on servers. And you can pretty much, you know, point it to whatever server you want and tell it what it's supposed to run, and it'll check and see if it is. But I have all kinds of things like that. Like I said, keep checking my homepage, and eventually I will have some kind of directory up there for the scripts. And if any of you guys that are listening have any neat little scripts that you wrote to do anything, but you know, send them on, pass them on. I'll slap them on a website, on a webpage somewhere central that everybody can find them, and we'll check them out and have a lot of fun. You never know. And on that same subject of scripting,
you may have something that someone else needs.
Yeah, right. I might have something that someone else needs. They might have something that someone else needs. But on that same subject, I was also thinking of developing a web interface or a web control backup script. Now, I know that there are a lot of these types of things out there, a lot of backup systems, per se, that are open source. There's like Amanda and... What else am I missing?
Arcadia,
and there's a whole bunch of them. I mean, the list is voluminous. However, a lot of them are really difficult to configure and kind of funny, and they use different kinds of software, server and client side software, and things like that. And I thought maybe it would just be cool to write some stupid little really configurable bash script that you can run as a CGI on your web server or on an internal web server kind of thing. You can go in and push some backups through using whatever method you prefer, like dump or or tar or CPIO, if God forbid, CPIO, if you wanted to, or, you know, whatever, something you can push a specific command to and, you know, tell it to use RCP or SSH or whatever. So I'm in the need of some ideas for that, and if you have any, again, do us a favor, do me a favor, email me and let me know. Interested to hear any ideas or suggestions you might have on that. It's just one of those side project things that I'm interested in playing with. Next side project thing. Anybody who has any information on telephone hybrid or telecom hybrid systems, we're in the need of getting something like that running over here at the tech show. Now, basically what that is, it's an electronic device that allows us to interface a telephone to our mixing board so that we can, you know, get people on the phone and push them right through the mixer, and you'll be able to hear them on the tech show. The reason why this is becoming such an important and all-encompassing issue right now is that if I were to look out the window, it's snowing like hell outside, and the roads are getting pretty bad. And I expect that to happen a few more times in the duration of the winter this year. And it would be really nice if we could come up with a device so that we did not all have to be in the same room in order to do the tech show at the same time. So, that being said, anybody who has any information on such a device, ideas, or maybe you know where we can get a professional one that's, you know, cheap. Really, really cheap.
Have Mark solder one for you.
Now that I think about it, I think I may have one of those Radio Shack ones floating around.
Well, I definitely, that's on the list, to have Mark build one up for me. And I even got a couple of plans, but, you know, I'm always interested in hearing and seeing what else is available around. And, you know, I don't have time to like, Google search every damn web page myself to death. So any information any of you might have would be a real plus in that direction.
You need to find a ham with a phone patch.
Right. That's exactly, that's exactly what it is. It's just like a phone patch that an old ham guy would have used. And I've even seen a few of them on, you know, like I looked on eBay. I saw a few of the old ham sets on eBay, and I bet they would still work. I mean,
oh yeah, they're still in use today.
Big old heat, you know, big old metal heat kit sets that are like 15 times bigger than my laptop kind of thing. But
we'll have to make a run through the ham fest this year.
Yeah, definitely.
There's a couple.
You never know. We might
have
a listener out there that is a ham and has some kind of thing like that he could, you know, let us borrow for the winter or donate, or at least tell us, you know, what direction to look for. And
I have a ham down in the fridge.
It's a different kind of ham, Dan. Don't mess with Dan's food, man. That's what you don't do. Don't mess with Dan's food.
There's like a rabid dog over there.
Right. Don't be talking about my ham, man. But no, that's the kind of thing. And, you know, I'm into all these little side projects this year, and it's become a lot of fun, and there's a whole bunch of things I'm working on. Another one, we have this company that Dan and I are doing a little side stuff for, helping them out. And one of the things that I got interested in as a sideline off of doing that was I started thinking about a Linux point of sale system. Well, you know, the whole thing with like a little barcode scanner and maybe a cash drawer and that kind of thing, and a little software to make everything run, a little inventory control, and that's a real fun project to do. You look around on the web for, you know, open source programs like that, and there are a few of them out there. However, none of the free ones, will quantify that a little bit, none of the free ones are actually finished. You know, a lot of them are very close, and they have, you know, examples to show you. And a lot of them run big GUI clients. They want you to install, you know, 14 different software packages in order to get the stuff to work, and you have to have everything just so. And I thought, you know, why can't I just write some stupid little thing, again, in a bash script, right? Why can't I just write some stupid little point of sale software under a bash script or some kind of scripting language, and have it pop up and work under, you know, either under regular TTY or under X or something like that. And I started poking around with it a little bit, and I can actually get some stuff to work, and it looks decent, and it it doesn't run very slow or anything like that. So I thought I would develop that for a little bit and see what happens with that too. And, you know, that's another project that I'm working on. But in order to accomplish that, I need to find a barcode scanner. One with a keyboard widget. Now, a lot of people have told me QCAT, but the problem with QCAT is it's a lot of them, I guess, are scrambled. You know what I mean? Like, first of all, they come with some kind of ID string on them, and then they scramble the barcode you got to decode them. But some of them that you can find, you can, I guess, cut traces or something, and that takes...
Yeah, you were able to cut traces on and that takes the ID code off.
No, they have other ones.
The scrambling was like
pull a five volt pin or something and jump or a wire jumper. I saw a few examples on there, but there again, you know, I used to have a couple of QCATs laying around. I can't even find them either. And new barcode scanners with a keyboard wedge are, I think, they're $50 or $60 on eBay, and I haven't got one of those yet either. So, if you have one of those and you'd like to help out with the project, that'd be cool too. Along with a cash drawer, I'm looking at that.
With cash in it?
Oh, with cash in it would be awesome.
Cash in it would be great. Yeah.
That would be even better, but, you know, just something that I can figure out.
You can be assured that it will be going to good use.
But, you know, it's just all kinds of fun little things. And I love participating in these little projects just to see, you know, just to see what we can make open source software do. And it's cool if it helps somebody, and if it doesn't help anybody, you know, as specifically with that piece of software, of course it always helps the programmers learn a little bit more about what they're doing and get more comfortable programming that kind of software. So with that being said, I think I have run out of steam.
You've exhausted all your...
I've exhausted
your information.
My content. Not that I couldn't ramble on, you know, for another hour, but...
Well, I did have another topic tonight, but I think I'll save it for next week. But I'll address that flash issue that Alan was having and what I discovered through my quick Google search and in testing, as Alan obviously heard, Homestar Runner. Apparently, flash works best with the Arts sound daemon running. And I think Arts is a sound daemon for KDE, if I'm not mistaken. Isn't it?
I think so, yeah, because...
Isn't it the KDE?
GNOME is ESD, so...
ESD... Oh. Let me take a quick look. It's the core sound system for KDE. Now, if you run the Arch Sound Daemon, and this is what I saw on the Google page, and then you run this command line... Arts DSP space Mozilla space Amsterdam.
You want to start the Arts name.
Yeah, well, you need to be root, I think, to do that. So it's Arts SD with
Ampersand.
With the Amsterdam.
With the Amsterdam.
And then run Mozilla with the command Arts DSP space Mozilla space Ampersand. And you should be able to hear sound on Homestar Runner. What are you looking at?
Because I can't remember what you typed. I typed very slow.
What are you? Did you start the Arts daemon yet?
Yeah, actually, that's not starting for me. So I have to figure out why.
Wait a minute. What's it say?
DSP can't be open. Resource temporarily unavailable.
Do you have ESD running? Do you have ALSA drivers running?
I should, yeah.
Do you have ALSA OSS? Link, what the heck? Well, anyway, that's how I got it going over here. While you're taking a nap, we can look at that. And I think we're going to probably close things up for the evening because it is 7 minutes after 10. And I need to get my beauty sleep tonight.
Boy, does he. Yeah.
And if you're at all familiar with the Flash interface, let me hold it up to the microphone. Maybe the users or listeners can see it through the microphone. But that's Flash for Linux. Flash for Linux right there on my laptop. I just compiled it. And it's almost the exact same kind of interface that you get with the Flash Professional. Now, I don't think it provides like scripting and everything, but hey.
It's a start.
It's a start. It's a really excellent job. They're looking for contributors to the project right now. So if you have any programming experience, give them a helping hand.
Do you think they wanted me to program a Flash for them in a shell script? I'd be happy to help.
Now, the comment was ESD is another daemon that will do the same, and you don't have to run ARTS. I didn't try it with ESD. I've used ESD in the past. The only thing is I saw somebody posting that it works with ARTS, but I think he said it doesn't work with ESD, or he couldn't get it to work with ESD. So I'm only doing what I, you know, reporting what I just tried. I prefer ESD myself if I'm going to use a daemon, but that's the way it be.
Such challenge.
Comments? Complaints?
No. No comments. I'll have to play around with it and see if I can get it running. Need my Homestar Runner fix.
Link?
We good?
I think we're going to about close it up for the evening.
All right, guys. Listen, we want to thank you for listening again, and please join us again next week, next Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern, that is, at the LinuxLink.net /TLLTS for your, hopefully your favorite, or at least one of the somewhat enjoyable tech shows that you listen to.
Thank you, everybody, for listening.
More stories about donuts.
Yeah, well, donuts. I have more donut stories and more technical information and, you know, all kinds of goodies going on. And just, you know, want to thank you again for listening to
our 15th donut stories.
It's a 15th episode now, right? 15th?
I don't know. I'm not counting. Look at the archives. I can't count that high.
Someone's hogging up all the bandwidth. I can't get to my email. I think this is number, I'm pretty sure it's 15. This is number 15. So we've done a lot of shows. This is the second show for this year. And hopefully there will be many, many more. And again, thank you for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Yes, we will.
Thanks for
thank
listening.
Thank you very much. And have a happy President's Day. No mail on Monday, right? Banks are closed.
Right.
Yes. Good time to do some Linux stuff.
That's right.
Yeah. Dan's PSA is here.
Except I have to work in
what?
your public service announcement.
Thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
Pulling up links tech show. Pulling up links tech show.